It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
So we're off to Nashville, are we?
We're off to that. When are we off to Nashville?
Yeah, we're having fun.
You're going to Pennsylvania, not Nashville.
By the time this airs, Pennsylvania will be history, my friend.
I'm sure. You'll be in Kenya by then.
I might be in Kenya by then, but we're
going
off
on a safari? What's the deal?
Yeah, shoot a few reindeer.
Alaska, buddy. You are geographically confused at the moment.
No, yeah, that would be true. But no, we're going to hang out in Kenya with some folks I've been writing to over the last couple of years on a neat spiritual journey and folks we've sent money to. But the reason I mentioned Nashville is because someone's sitting here from Nashville.
We have another guest. We've done two in 1 week.
I know, but they don't
but
know.
But no
that.
One will know
this
that. Time know
yeah,
we're
going to air in July. But I thought people might want to know we're headed to Nashville.
Who is this guy?
Because registration deadline is March 1. You can get more details at the website. But this is the first trip you and I have taken God Journey on the road, really, and done kind
and
of a retreat together.
Yeah. That sounded a little official.
Well, you know, it's not
Are
our fault.
Are you sure?
That's not our retreat. We're just going to be guests there. Let that all hang on Jason's head, who's organizing it for us. But he invited us to come, a family camp. And
I don't
yeah,
know.
By March 1.
Oh,
I usually
what?
Don't know. I usually don't know where I'm going to be in April by March 1.
I'm not even sure
1.
What I'm doing by March 1.
Well,
but this
April
is Chris Dupre.
But April 16 and 18, you are going to be in White Bluff, Tennessee.
I am?
You are.
Okay.
Because that's being so advertised. Anyway, you want to meet me? You want to meet me?
No, I don't want to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Wade. I know you.
This is a friend of Brad's who's snuck into
this
the old
is,
podcast room
This
today.
Is my buddy. My wife looked at us this morning and says, that could be your older brother. I went, yeah, well, he's older and bigger. This is Chris Dupre, my older, bigger brother.
That is the sweetest introduction I've ever had.
You mean taller.
Taller.
Yes. That's what I mean.
That is what you mean.
That's what I mean.
I thought so.
All right. Who's got a scale? Who's got a scale right now? Right now.
Scale off?
So what, you went to kindergarten with Chris? Or I mean, why would you drag Chris in here today? Poor
we
guy.
Met 7707.
We did.
I don't remember who I met 8808.
I remember who I met
7707.
I will never forget.
I don't have any idea where I was on 7707.
We were at the Titan Stadium. He was doing some worship.
Titan Stadium? That sounds like Nashville.
In Nashville, yeah.
It is Nashville.
So first place,
don't you hate the Titans? Really?
I don't care about the Titans.
Okay.
I mean, I love the Titans for those who are in Nashville, but I really don't know.
I'm from Nashville. Yeah. I don't care about the Titans either.
Okay, well, so
of course, we're all Packer people here.
So he
well, not all.
He was doing worship. I mean, this is one of those bizarre moments.
He was doing worship.
The worship. That does sound wrong.
Yeah, it sounds horrible.
Doing worship.
He was doing worship.
After that, I was doing walking.
Okay, he was worshiping, and he was the lead guy for it.
Lead guy in a stadium full of people. This is not my kind of event.
No, I know. That's why you weren't there.
That's,
right?
That's why I don't know.
Yeah, I know. That's why
there
you weren't
there. There weren't that many. There was only 70,000.
Yeah.
70,000 people, and this is the doing worship guy. Chris
well,
do worship.
For a moment, there were many
worship.
People.
No.
Were other people joining us?
Stop.
No
this
one did.
This was one of those. This was on like, one
now,
of those fun
now,
moments.
Now I'm offended.
Yeah, I know, but
okay.
Stop.
I'll get over it.
And this was one of those fun moments. I was having a great conversation with a buddy that had flown in just to say, "Hey, if you're going to be there, then I'll hang out." And we're just talking. And I didn't really pay attention to what was going on at the time because I was really enjoying the conversation. Chris finishes, walks around the corner, and I don't have this happen to me like a lot.
So while he was doing worship, you were talking to an old buddy. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's why he was doing worship.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure all of heaven was worshiping.
I've already had this conversation with him.
I was the only guy not participating.
So he walked over to you guys and said, stop talking while I'm worshiping.
He wasn't doing worship.
I wasn't doing worship. He wasn't doing worship. I was the not doing worship.
So was he coming over to chew you out?
No. He was just walking around the corner. And then all of a sudden, it's like to my visible eyes, it's like God put a highlighter on him. And I just,
visible eyes or the eyes of your spirit?
No, my like visible. It was enough to stop me in mid sentence. I looked at him. I tried. I said, who is that? It's a glow-in-the-dark guy. I mean, who is that? And my friend says, oh, I know him. That's Christopher. I said, well, introduce me. Because I've never met a glow-in-the-dark person. Okay.
Okay.
I know this is bizarre.
And I've never been one.
And is this a nighttime stadium event?
No, I wasn't on any drugs. It wasn't psychedelic. I hadn't done anything. I was not worshiping either.
You weren't doing.
No, I wasn't spiritual. I wasn't doing anything. He walked around the corner. I looked at him. And we just introduced real quick. And I said, so who are you? And he said, oh, I'm Chris Dupre. And he didn't give the normal tags.
Okay.
Well, so he
PhD?
Well, like everyone else, there's the Intergalactic Bishop of the Fourth Order, First Apostle, something or another. I mean, it was...
Wow, you're one of those.
Of those?
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
There was a lot of them.
I've met a couple.
You could have thrown a rock and hit an apostle, okay?
Really?
Well, not really.
Not really.
Not literally. They would have had a business card.
We could hit somebody with a business card.
Okay, the angel would have blocked it.
Okay, there you go.
Probably not. Pull his hand away.
You're bad.
No, I'm serious.
You're snarky today, Wade.
I have had one of those days.
Okay, so... I said, so what do you do? He says, well, I'm a storyteller. And it's like, well, he was a worship leader guy. But he says, well, I'm a storyteller. It's like, well, tell me a story. And he launches in to one of these beautiful little kid stories. And I just went, that's awesome. I mean, I was really fascinated by it. Well, tell me another one. And the things that he started bringing up are projects we're kind of to this day pursuing because it really felt like, oh, my gosh, this is exciting.
So Highlighter Guy is a kid's book author, huh?
Well, going to be.
Okay.
And I'm really excited about what we're doing, but we just kind of struck up a little friendship. It's not that dissimilar from when I met you. It was different.
Do I have a highlighter on my face?
No.
Was he doing worship?
No. But
no.
I was doing sermon.
Oh,
and God interrupted my service.
Brad do sermon.
I Brad do sermon. It was
hilarious.
Interrupted my message, and it was so prevalent that I just went, I just had to stop my message, because I don't know that it was that good anyways. But
it caught my attention.
And then I asked, are you Wayne Jenkins? That's how I met him. So I'm sitting with two guys that I met in pretty interesting ways, and I like you both. It's great.
We like you.
What do you think of that day?
Oh, gosh.
Was that weird?
Did he have a highlighter face?
He didn't. I don't know whether I was highlighted or whether I was filled with sweat because it was like.
It could have just been the sun.
Nashville in July. Enough
said. Yeah, that's what
July.
It was the sun hitting the reflection.
It was 95 degrees. And I'd been on stage for half an hour, and I'd been waiting by the stage for 2 hours because that's when they called me down. We'd run out of water, our little area. I was sweating profusely. Got up, did a half an hour, came down, and all I wanted to do was to get inside the stadium in this little air conditioning room, which I knew had cold water. And this guy stops me.
Ooh.
And
that was me.
That was you.
That was me. I was getting in your way of
a much smaller man. Stopped you.
Yeah.
This large guy gets in my way.
I mean, shorter man.
Blocking the entire tunnel. I could barely get
by. You're right in there with us, buddy.
So that's where you did. You set up at the tunnel.
I was in the player's tunnel.
I was just talking
to Buddy.
To meet
a mutual friend.
Apostles or whatever. Yeah. Waiting for all people to walk by.
Okay, good. Did you have your autograph book with you?
No, I didn't autograph nothing, but I did. The only thing I had with my phone number on it was the Shaq. So
do you think it was a kook?
No, I didn't think he was a kook, because the guy he was with, I knew. I liked the guy he was with.
But the story's
a little different. I didn't come out and say I was a story guy. Kind of. What he said was, I do stories. And then I said, oh, I love stories. I'm a story guy. And then...
Oh, did you ask me what I did?
Yeah, I said...
Oh, so it's always good to get the facts straight.
Yeah, but whatever. So I remember him as a storyteller.
And so, that's what I did say. Well, I'm a story guy. I'm a storyteller. Everything kind of at the end of the day, I want to be able to tell a story. I think that's what Jesus did. Jesus used that as a form of communication that we... don't use well nowadays.
No, I
think there's a plethora of ways to tell what is true and get into the human heart and do it in such a way that we teach more than we just open up and tell stories.
Yeah.
I think we miss it. I just got quiet and serious here for a moment. Wow.
Did you? I didn't notice.
Oh, okay.
It got quiet, but I didn't know that you got serious.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So we're talking.
We'll shake you out of it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It won't take long.
No, don't worry about it. So we're talking,
and you
tell me a story.
And I tell you a story.
What did you think? What did you leave that day thinking? That was weird?
Well, I figured I'd get one quick story out, and then I could go get my cold water. So
I went
told
for
you,
a twofer.
Well, you went for threefer.
Okay.
You asked me three. Well, tell me another one, and then tell me another one. And I remember walking past
Multiple
going.
Book deal or something like that.
Well, no,
but here's.
This was the landscaping, soon to be a publisher guy.
I didn't know what he did.
Landscaping.
So at the end, you handed me a book and say, here's, why don't you read this? And here's my information in the back. And I get books and CDs a lot from people. Hey, would you read this? Tell me what you think. Do you know anybody? And
really?
So I just thought, well, this is another one. This is great. And. But the thing that I walked away with was that when I was telling you a story, you saw and heard what was in my heart.
Yep.
And you wanted me to finish. And here's the thing that just drives me crazy about people that say that they care is that they never let you say what's in your heart. They don't go there. All they want is initial information to know something about you for them. And then they're on to the next thing. You waited for me to finish. I only did it for 1 minute.
I know.
But I finished a story. You were totally engaged till I was done. Then asked me to tell you another one. The second you did that, I said, I like this guy. I really did. I did. I said, because I knew that you were a human heart person.
Yep.
That you were not a system, what do you got for me person.
Tell me another one, Chris.
Well, you can't squeeze in on this.
Well, there was
you're being snarky.
There was a priest, a rabbi.
Watch it. I like that story. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. Matt Robertson, Jim Baker.
Oh, my favorite. You booked for the
No, but I
it wasn't yesterday.
I got to the third story
weeks ago.
And it was, I knew that I would see you again.
Well, what about what was in his heart that resonated with you? I mean, we're hearing the stories. I know some, what's under those stories? Because we hear lots of stories that will go, move on.
Well, yeah. Bottom line, I felt like he knew something. He told me a story that I'm sitting here like, if I was a little kid and I was listening to this, that was so life affirming. So drew me out and made me feel like somehow I was loved. I mean, everything that you wrote in the He Loves Me thing, I got in a 1 minute synopsis treatment of a...
Hold it. Everything everything I wrote in a 200-page book.
Did I step in the matter?
You got it.
I've read that book. And I could pretty much not everything.
I could summarize this book in 1 minute.
I don't need
it. Or less. You don't need that too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
read a chapter. There you go.
I don't even think the word frog is in his book.
No. Yeah, Philip is it. There was a heart that came through that I felt touched by. That I went, golly, this guy knows the God I know. Hmm. And we're at this big, you know, pumping session to, you know, change the destiny of a city. And I'm going like, I'm just not connecting with that aspect. There felt like a lot of froth there. And what he shared felt like a lot of substance. And I was listening not because, oh, gee, I'm so genuine. It was because, oh, wow, you're saying something that's hitting me right there. I was connecting very much with the heart that you were sharing. And I was going, okay, that's different. And so, you know, whether it was God, like, highlighting a moment or whatever, whether it was sun glistening off a sweaty guy, I don't know.
That's part of it, I'm sure.
But there was a point of connection where it's like, you know what? And as our friendship has deepened, we stay up to all, you know, hours of the night laughing and having a lot of fun sharing God's heart. And that's the thing that I'm going like, that's what I'm enjoying. Whether anything comes out of it or not, I've learned to enjoy God's heart with another brother. And that's cool. So I wanted the two of you guys to meet.
Cool.
So that's why you're here.
Well, cool.
So he came out to Los Angeles on his way to a difficult mission field assignment teaching in Hawaii.
Oh, someone's got to do it. I prayed years ago, Lord, please don't ever let me move to New York City. I moved there. Please don't ever let me go to the Midwest. I live there. God, please not the South. I'm in Nashville. So I'm praying, please, no extended vacations in Hawaii.
When he answered.
And boom.
Oh, wow. Did you work that system? That was great. It
took me a while.
I don't have the same ring on that story. But
thus, we're back to Chris Dupre.
Dupre.
You got it working. You ask for the opposite of what you want. And,
exactly
there
right.
You go.
Wow.
That's working well.
It's working for me.
So the headline here is, how's a worship guy in front of tens of thousands of people get to understand the heart of God's love? Because I don't think we would say that's normally the natural course of such folks, or would you say that it is?
Uh-oh, he stepped into it.
Well, I read this book by Wayne Jacobson. No.
You're going to put it back on him. There you go.
You know what? It's really funny. I got saved in 73, and my heart just came alive for Jesus in 73. And it was real. It was a non-religious world. It was a group of college students who all had hair halfway down our back. And all we wanted to do was get together and pray and love on him and love each other and kind of serve each other. And then we learned how to do church some years later. And I know, part of me died. I remember in 89 going to a Vineyard conference, and John was there and a bunch of other leaders. And the worship was personal. It was to him. I'm singing words to him. And I remember in the middle of it, suddenly I began to weep. My wife looks over at me and I am just weeping like a baby. And what had happened, he took me back to, remember when this is what we did? Remember when you'd take your guitar and you would spend hours with me just with your guitar, and the songs were for me, and you used to write more songs for me than you wrote for them? And I just wept and just turned my heart back to who he is and what we had. And I realized, you know what? It's actually really simple. There's this one, this real personality that loves me to the depths that he loves me. And I had learned, I thought that the way to best serve him was to get into a particular system and then work up the ladder, to the point that at that particular time, I had my wingtip shoes, my suit and my tie, and that was my expression. And I would change. Oh, yeah, buddy. Oh, buddy, you're looking at me.
Have you ever seen him in a suit?
What?
Yeah.
I looked in your closet. You don't have any of those.
What are you doing
in his closet?
I stay in his house.
Yeah.
Well, I stay in a lot of homes. I don't go through people's closets.
I don't know.
Oh, no.
I'll check yours out in a moment.
Gosh, I had to double check my underwear drawer.
This is a deeper friendship than I need to know about.
Exactly.
Brothers.
Yeah. So that's,
wow.
I'm serious. That's where I was headed. They had churches for me to go pastor and planned, you know, they were going to send me out here to do this one. And Laura finally is like, honey, something's not right. And something needs to change. And so, she said, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we need to go on this, this journey to this conference, because there's something there. I heard a teaching, and there's something that they're talking about Jesus again, and I want to go there. And so she dragged me along. I mean, literally dragged me along. I just did not want to go. And I remember going, wept through the whole thing, came back to my church, walked in the front door on a Sunday morning, because we got back that Sunday morning, and church was going on. And I walked in, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, my gosh. And it was as if I had gone back 50 years and I was watching something that I didn't even remember being a part of, or how could I have been? Not that the people weren't lovely, not that there wasn't sincerity, but I had so changed in 1 week's time.
And that mostly was just this engaged sense of I'm loved by the Father? Is that how you describe it or not?
I have the story with my dad kind of runs the gamut of how this was, what was going on. My dad was a World War II vet, got shot down over Germany in his 13th mission, taken prisoner, abused in prison, came out of the war. Back then, they didn't talk about, you know, post-traumatic stress. What they did was, you just shut up and don't talk about it. And so they did their job, they did their business, and I spent the first 8 years of my life abused on so many levels that father to me was a horrible word. And Mom yanked me away and my older brother and sister and pulled us away to another town an hour away. Grew up. She's my hero. I loved her. She is wonderful. And then there was this other guy that by law would come out once a month. Once every year we go on a two-week vacation, but we were always with relatives, so there were people around and certain things that we had to adhere to that I didn't know about at the time, found out years later. And he was just there every now and then, but there was no relationship. I just was scared of him. His hands, when his hands were near me, I'd get nervous because I thought they would hurt me. And as I got older and got bigger, I didn't really worry about it, but there was no father to me. Was just, as a matter of fact, every father that I knew except one was an alcoholic, abused his wife, or cheated on his wife. Everyone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That kind of destroys that word and image.
Yeah, it did. But at 19, something changed. And without going into it, I literally came home for lunch. I'm sitting with a bologna sandwich, standing in my living room with a bologna sandwich, listening to some music. I close my eyes. There's a breeze on my face. It's wintertime. I can't figure out where the breeze is coming from. I open my eyes. I'm on a hillside. Now, I'm not – Brad knows me.
Yeah, he's pretty normal.
I'm pretty straight.
Pretty normal.
And I'm on a hillside.
I don't know. You in each other's underwear.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he's like that far.
Yeah, I didn't invite him. And
okay, I'm at ease now.
Yeah, there you go. And suddenly, I literally had a face-to-face with Jesus who held me and put my head on his chest and rocked me. And I said, he wanted me to look at his face, and I couldn't look at his face because I felt shame and fear. And he lifted my chin up and looked at me with it. And the two words that were connected were wild love. And I knew that there was a love I'd never seen. It went all the way down to who he was, the core of his soul. And I knew it was wild because no man could tame it. No system could tame it. And that if I would know that, it would keep me throughout my whole life.
Was this a 73 coming to Christ experience?
Shortly after that.
Shortly after that. Okay, so back in that time frame.
It's 74, and he held me, put my, again, and he looked at me face to face, and he said, "You will need to know this." And I said, "What?" He said, "I love you, I love you, I love you." And I'm looking at him weeping. He takes my head, puts it on his chest, and then suddenly this ball of fire shot out, literally covered my face and went deep into my heart, and I fell backwards into my room, fell back over onto a bed that was in a corner, and just began to weep and wept and wept and wept and literally wept through my pillow. I picked up my pillow, put my hand on my mattress. It was soaking wet. And 20 years of whatever had come out, I woke up, or not woke up, I got up, and instantly the first thought I had was, I love my father, meaning my earthly dad. And I suddenly was filled with, your dad was abused in prison. This happened to him. This happened to him. Here's where he was misunderstood. And I had compassion for him like I had never had, and began a journey and a process to know who he was, to get connected. And in the middle of that journey, he was on a journey of healing himself. We ended up some years later meeting in the middle where all I can say is forgiveness flowed. There was reconciliation, and for 10 years, he was my best friend.
Wow.
And it solidified to me the greater truth of how my father saw me. And so it was a parallel track of learning one earthly father, one heavenly father, and each helped the other.
Cool. But this was before your ascendancy into the wing-tipped club, right?
Yeah, well, that, you know... I went through that with my dad, and I thought that at one point in time, after a few years of that, of knowing I'm loved, then suddenly I was confronted with, you know, you're not a teenager, you're a young guy now. By the way, we have the system. Here's this thing, and if you want to get ahead, you can go out there, you can get a job somewhere at Kodak or Xerox. I was in Rochester. Those are the big. You can do that. Or you can have the highest calling, which is be a pastor of a local church. And so I didn't know anything more, so that's what I did. I opened my home. I became a home group leader. I became assistant home group leader.
Oh,
yeah, I started out that way.
Oh, there you go, Bible.
Yeah, yeah. And then I became, and I was a worship leader the whole time.
Sorry.
You got a guitar.
Well, the thing is, I played guitar, so I became the worship leader.
There you go.
That helps.
I knew seven chords, not three. I knew seven chords, and so I could pretty much
play
everything.
That's a couple of keys, isn't it?
Yeah, it's whatever those are. And so I did that. I was worship leader and did these other things, and then finally said, you know what, you'd really be a good elder in the church. And I'm thinking, well, I'm 29. I don't sound very elderish, but no, that's not what it's about. It's the next step. So, okay, the next step. God bless the next step. So I did, and then they said, well, you'd be a great associate assistant pastor. That'd be
associate
great.
Assistant?
Yeah.
A double A?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're senior associate.
I guess that's what the wingtips are for. It's a multi-layer system.
But you didn't. No one came in and said, hey, we've got this great system. No one talks about it.
One said anything about a system. All I knew was that this was the world, and this is how you move within the world.
Isn't this a common story? I mean, people who come to Christ even out of nowhere. Jesus invites you into a field out of a winter front room or whatever.
Exactly.
And engages you.
Yes.
And then we start thinking, well, I'm going to live this right. And we start looking toward this religion called Christianity. And I found most people I talk to never found love difficult in the beginning days.
Oh, it's...
It was just there. It was real. It was...
It's a honeymoon.
Then it kind of builds in, well, now there's some things you need to be doing for God. That begins to take you down this road where, like you say, you look at this somewhat later after your, whatever, revival weekend or whatever, that weekend that gets real still in your heart, and you go back and you go, how could I have ended up here? But you did.
Anyone
we
that knows
did.
Me says, you had wingtips? I mean, I wore bib overalls with flannel shirts.
Yes, that guy, I know.
Yeah, wow. It's like... You know,
you do belong in the South.
I mean, in college, I wore the same bib overalls every day, and I changed the
Rochester
shirt. I was just a quasi hippie at the time, and for me to suddenly end up with wingtips, and I there was a system, an unspoken line of progression that you walked. Actually, it really wasn't unspoken. It was spoken.
The expectations are clear.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's all in the name of doing something wonderful for God. It's never, we've got this system we want to eat you with. Although that's what's going on. Would you say?
I would say there's never, except it's spoken in such a way that you're left with few other options. If you are told week after week or month after month that what you're doing and what this thing is the deepest thing on God's heart, it first sounds good, but what happens is everything else isn't.
Yeah, it eliminates the options.
It eliminates all the other options, and that's what happens.
Yep.
I don't think there's anything.
It invalidates everything else, and it says, this come. Must be here.
Yeah. Now we want the people that have the good jobs because they bring
they pay for the associate assistant.
So we can't put them down too much, but we have to make sure that
they get plugged in.
That there's a they get plugged in into what they're supposed to do.
He meant the Matrix battery.
Yeah, I got you. Sit down in this chair.
You were a copper top. Durham myself.
And what's sad is this is always done, for the most part, with the best of intentions. People, like you said, wonderful people. Really believe what they're doing is the right thing.
Best of intentions.
We get those emails all the time from somebody who just wants to rake us over the coals for what we're doing, and they're honestly, I know what
they're
I'm
sincere.
Doing is right, and you should be here too, and we're going to miss people like you. And it's not nasty, controlling people that just want to hurt folks. It's people who really think this is the way Jesus gave us to do it.
This is the pattern. This is the model. This is what we've been told to build.
But it does what you describe later in your journey. 20 years down the road, you realize you climbed all this ladder. But something's been lost in here. I no longer remember that I'm loved.
See, that's the fruit. And you know, I hate to use the expression because it's been used 1,000 times, but the root determines the fruit. And where
that
you,
is cute.
Yeah, yeah.
I could do something that rhymes with that, but I won't.
Don't go there.
Yes, okay. I went there and I silently left. I left. But it's really true. How you root yourself into something, it will determine. And I looked by 1989 when I went to that conference, that Vineyard conference, and I went and I realized I began to look back at the last 10 years, 12 years, 13, whatever it was. I began to just grieve, and I was crying for what was in front of me, but I was crying for what I knew at that moment. I am going to have to give up, to leave. I have to step away, because what's going on, and I'm not attacking local church. I love people gathering, loving on Jesus, learning, growing, being taught, being encouraged. But the system, at least that I was a part of, thought was it. The fruit was telling me it wasn't, because the fruit was not making me love Jesus more. I actually used the name of Jesus in teachings and in dialogue that wasn't personal and intimate. So his name was a power word. It wasn't a friend.
You know, what's so striking to me is, you know, knowing some of your story and overcoming the abuse and the fact that it's like, how in the world did your heart get transformed from one of fear and I don't want to be close to that hand, that's only going to strike me, to all of a sudden having compassion, and it's really there. It really is first love. It's God's love got deposited somehow in your heart.
Oh, very much so.
And because of that, there was the capacity to love something that previous to that, you didn't have any.
I went home for lunch, had a banana sandwich on the front side of that, whatever sandwich I had. On the front side of that.
That was a bologna sandwich.
It's a bologna sandwich.
But the banana. A bologna sandwich.
A bologna and banana sandwich.
Man.
Yeah, I wouldn't say don't do that at home. But on the front side of that bologna sandwich, I could care less about my father. I am confronted with the depth of the affections of God in his face, in his smile. He had a smile, by the way, that I had never seen anyone smile like that. By his face, his smile, his embrace, and the ball of fire that went into my heart. I came out of that. On the other side of that lunchtime, I had compassion and love for my father and desire for reconciliation. Didn't know how it was going to happen, but I began to pray. And it was a journey to get there. It wasn't I walked to my dad's house and say, hey, Dad, I love you. I love you too, Chris. Let's kiss him. Yeah, but what wasn't there before was there, and it was not my power. That was obvious.
Yeah, and it was interesting because Wayne, I forget what, I don't know when we aired it, but you talked about the whole leaving our first love is not just, gee, I'm no longer loving God. It's the fact that all of this begins with his loving us. And when we leave that, you start ascending a system in effort to love him back. I'm going to be sincere. This must be the way I'm being told. This is where that leads. And we end up in a place where it's like, if this isn't fueled and focused on the fact that, you know what? He's in love with me. He loves me. That actually is not a narcissistic centered, you know, selfish. It's like, that's what empowers us to live this life. If I'm going on any other fuel other than that first being delivered to my heart, we're kind of building some self-effort thing.
Well, that's what John says in 1 John, when he says that we love because he first loved us, that we have no capacity to love unless we're first loved. And, you know, I want to grow in love. Well, then first you have to grow in knowing you're loved. So the thing that kills me is going in and whether it's a church or whether it's any place that gets up and tells you and points at you to love Jesus, and you can make
do it more.
Love him more. But what they don't do is they don't unveil him.
More love.
Yeah.
Oh, that song.
Yeah, that one. Did you write that, Chris?
No, but I wish I had the royalties.
Oh. So you can be bought.
No.
Okay, good.
No, they've tried.
Good.
But what I realized was that my capacity to love is based, I don't think, the most important question used to be, How much do you love God? I don't think that's the most important question.
Not at all.
The most important question is not just how much does God love you? I think that that's the question, but fleshing it out is how much do you know he loves you? Because that's the one that changes you.
Yeah.
If you just think he loves you a little, even though he loves you more than you can ever imagine, if you just think he loves you a little, that's who you become.
A little loved.
A little loved, and you become a little lover. No, seriously.
I know. It just sounds.
It does.
It sounds, unfortunately, very true.
unfortunately, it is. True.
I'm a little loved.
I become a little lover.
He's a little lover.
And it's not even just what I know, because you can have the confession, I know God loves me completely. But we're really talking more about there's an engagement that love.
Yes.
That wins me into a reality. And I don't care who you are. That's a growing deal. You start out just a little loved, even if it feels totally complete. But that's how it starts out. I begin to engage him in what may seem overwhelming to me at the time. But as I continue to engage him and grow in the reality of that love, that's what transforms me more and more.
I had a similar thought. I was in Washington some years ago, and I love politics. My dad was a history teacher. He taught me the presidents when I was 4.
Wow.
I'm going through one of the halls in the Senate, and Hubert Humphrey is walking towards me. Now, I'm just a kid, but I know who he is. So, Mr. Humphrey, it's a pleasure to meet you, and I talked to him for a second. He's very engaging, very kind. So beforehand, I knew who he was. Suddenly, I'm meeting him, and I'm seeing his eyes. I'm seeing we're connected, and that was a different level. But I don't go home with him. And so there's a whole other group of people that knows him like I don't.
Right.
But the church met him in the hall. But they don't go home with him. They don't take the extra time. But they just learn stuff about him like somebody goes to Wikipedia or an encyclopedia to learn about Humphrey. Tell me all about Humphrey. Tell me all. And you can learn everything about him. But if you don't go home without knowing him.
And that's, I think, the system we're talking about earlier. It's not just Sunday morning events or Sunday morning groups. The idea, what I think it's, we always talk about is the system of religious performance, which can undermine a Sunday morning group. It can undermine a non-attending group of folks, our house church people. If the system of performance is, I've got to do something to be loved, or if I do something, I'm more loved. It really is the loss of the first love. I'm loved by him. And as I grow in the awareness of that love, I'm transformed. To now, ooh, I want to be more loved by him, so I've got to do things to earn it. And that's that system where you end up at the end of it, and you've lost sight of the fact that your first love, because you're not possibly doing enough to earn it. You didn't do enough to earn it the first time, but you forgot about that. And now we're trying to earn it by all our good works and doing something big for Jesus and fulfilling vision and passion and all that stuff. And I think that whole first love thing, what I lost was I'm loved.
I'm loved.
I'm loved by this man who loves me more than anyone on this planet ever has or ever will. And as I just keep unpacking that reality, I am transformed. And if I don't unpack that, like you say, you end up to be a little loved, even though you can talk about, oh, Jesus loves us completely, but I end up a little loved and therefore a little lover. And unfortunately, I know so many people who get stuck there, unfortunately. And I know I did for a big part of my life, not wanting to, thought I was doing what God wanted me to do. But I had lost sight. I was doing things to be loved because I had lost sight of the fact that I already was.
You know, I love how David, when he comes, you know, taste and see. It's like, you know, this is not something like, hey, I said it, you believe it. Darn it, it's true. Well, that's nice. But until this becomes personal, it doesn't spill out in a reality of my life that can touch anyone else. It's stuck in my head, or it's stuck in a confession. But that ability to go like, wait a minute, I took a drink for myself. I didn't hear about the great drink you had. I tasted for myself. That makes all the difference. All of a sudden, that becomes not some, I hope it's true. I'll confess it's true all my life, hoping it's true. It's a, oh, it is true. And that's where we're changed. That's not the fruit of a bunch of self effort. Or I'm gonna do better, try harder. It's like, Lord, how'd you accomplish that? When I see him for who he is, something happens.
It changes everything. I recently had an a talk with a guy, and he was not quite understanding the nature of how God thinks and feels, and he was trying to do it in a very intellectual way and coming at it from different viewpoints. And I just looked at him, and I just said, you know what you need to do? And he goes, what's that? I said, you need to take a bite out of God. He goes, what? I said, you can't take a bite out of food unless you're close enough, and then it gets in you. You need a bite out of God. He goes, I understand. I said, he says, taste and see that he's good. So you can look at him, and he might be good for a while till you walk away and your eyes don't see him. You can touch him, and your eyes, you know, your hands lose it. You can hear him, but you get out of ear sight. But take a bite out of him. Find something about him that you can take with you and carry with you about him, and watch what that thing does in you. Mm. So my advice was take a bite out of God, because I can describe a steak to you, and if you've never had one. Yeah, medium. Now I'm starting to get hungry.
or a warm chocolate chip.
Or a warm chocolate chip.
It's a good time for Sarah to walk in.
Oh, baby, yeah.
But if you've,
we'll get some more email there. One, yeah. All my descriptions don't mean a thing.
Well, I mean, I remember growing up, and you'd hear these people talk like, you know that you know that you know. Then I'm just sitting here going, what? I mean, just because I didn't know. I'm just going like, don't keep saying that. I don't know. What do I know? Because I'm like, I'm a really smart guy. Just tell me. I'll know. And they go, but you know that you know. You know deep in your nowhere. And I'm just going like, I don't know where that organ is. Okay, that just seemed like such gobbledygook. But then you, quote, take a bite. And all of a sudden it starts to go, oh, that's what they were talking about. And I love in the gospel, in First John, it says, you know, the things we're talking about, the things that our hands have touched, our eyes have seen.
Right.
You just go like, that's what this is about. That Christianity is not a religion. It is something that you live out with that person. That religion thing, the ladder that might be leaning on the wrong building. Yeah, you can climb that. I don't know what you're going to find. It's a bummer that once you get up to the top, you go, is this all there is? But the reality is we really are meant to have a real component of God's a person that I can know. It's not a doctrine to confess.
And the best way to know that, I think, for people who say, well, how, is just find some space and ask him to show you his reality. This is not something you get in a book or a seminar somewhere. This is really something you say, God, would you make yourself known to me? I want a big enough piece of God, take a bite out of, and live inside that reality. And God's the one that's got to show you your way into that. I love how your story began. This wasn't, you know, I got these three keys to taking a bite out of God. But no, God made himself known. And I think it's what we just ask him to do and watch it unfold in our lives as God invites us into that space. Because it is something that rises from our heart.
Yeah. Do you not do fireball seminars?
Fireball seminars.
Nobody
like
comes
shooting out of my chest.
Yeah.
Nobody like the royalties on that.
You know, wing tips.
I think we're talking about something pretty good here.
No, I look at the realities. I love the fact that you didn't then take your experience and now others must have this in order to know that. Because I've never heard, I know you, been in your home, been through your closet, not your underwear drawer.
Yeah.
But the reality is,
I'm at ease.
I've never heard that story. There isn't some fireball testimony that has to be told for me to know that, gosh, somehow God did work out his love inside you. I know that, but I've known more quiet realities, not big fanfare. And I love knowing that, oh, my gosh, you don't have fireball seminars, as if that's the one way. None that I know of.
Will now. Fireball.com. They already got it.
Is it an available domain? Because I do think that's the sad reality, is somebody has an encounter and now it's like, this is the way. I don't, you know, for some people that may be like, wow, I can't even get my brain around that you left your room. And it's like, well, so what? That's not the necessary part. It's the somehow you took a bite. Somehow you were fed something. And something's different. Because I do think a lot of times those are made to be special. And the quiet ways that God can communicate that same thing in a perhaps non-supernatural way.
Sure.
So we glorify the form instead of the reality.
Yeah.
And then we miss the reality. So, well, we're running out of time. We got people missing buses and planes and not getting to work on time, and we're at fault and all that. But this is what must have been what you heard in the My Beautiful One CD that you came back so excited about that you're now helping distribute. The same spirit of invitation into the... Well, and it's an instrumental CD.
You know the coolest thing about that is the songs, the music songs, they're all worship songs. But what we have that we put on the CD is it's just instrumentation.
Right.
It's just beautiful music. You wouldn't know unless you were digging through the inside pamphlet that there were actually worship words
right
behind that. But when Christopher sent that out to me, you know, we were going through some challenged, rough patches, whatever, and I just sat there when I first played it. It's like, it did something in my heart just listening to it.
And we've heard that from other people who've ordered them from Windblock.
Yeah, it's like there's something there that I'm just going, gosh, how God touches us in the ways that are unique to us are just so marvelous.
Well, I know you got to go, but I just heard a sweet thing that just came to me. The guy that just did the film editing for the movie Book of Eli. He had done The Matrix. He'd done a number of 30, 40 different movies. And he just said, Chris, I got your CD. And when I listened to it, it turned my face to God and his face towards me.
Wow.
And I just said, thank you, Jesus. That's all I care. As long as you see his face, that changes everything.
Amen.
Sweet.
If people want to get a hold of you, you got a website or some way people will get in touch
with you? I'm getting one made up. Right, I had one, an older one, but I've left a certain arena going to a new one. So it will end up being ChrisDupre.com.
Okay.
I've got the name back again because somebody else took it.
Took your name? Oh, that's
took
weird.
My
that's
name.
There's two Dupres in the
yeah,
world?
Yeah, no,
wow.
No,
we'll put a link on the website so when that link's active.
Go to Windblown. We can get your details up there.
Yeah, Windblown's got everything you need.
Well, it's great. It's a pleasure to meet you. Looking forward to spending part of the day today with you and Brad, and understand why you've become such good friends. So it'll be fun for me.
Yeah.
And glad to have shared you with the group that we have listening.
Thank you for having
me on.
I'm honored.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.